Okay. All right. So tonight, Parshat Maaseh, last parsha in Bamidbar. Baruch mentioned before we're leaving the desert. Not quite, but that is what we're going to talk about. Been waiting for this parsha for a while. The truth is, we could have done two different machlokas of Rambam Ramban in this week's parsha. Not such a machlokas, but they have different positions on what on why Moshe wrote down all of the places that they visited. We could have discussed that. But instead, I thought I'd discuss seemingly a much more pressing issue, and one that's much more relevant to me, seeing as I'm going to America next week, and that is the mitzvah of settling in the land of Israel. Now, the reason why we're talking about it this week is because this pasuk shows up. This is after Hashem gives the command of how they're going to divide up the land. He starts giving all the borders and appoints nesiim for each shevet to divide up the nachalot. And then Hashem says, and you're going to take possession of the land and you're going to settle it. Now, what does it mean? So Rashi says it means you shall dispossess it of its inhabitants. He says the word v'horashtem over here doesn't just mean to inherit, but it means to inherit from, to remove. And then v'shavtem ba, you will be able to remain in it. But if not, you will not be able to remain in it. In other words, Rashi sees the focus of this pasuk as v'horashtem, and v'horashtem means to uproot from the land the current inhabitants for the purpose of dwelling in it. That's the thrust of the pasuk according to Rashi. Ramban, though, jumps right in and says, in my opinion, this is a positive commandment in which he is commanding them to dwell in the land and inherit it, because he has given it to them and they should not reject the inheritance of the eternal. So this, according to Ramban, is the mitzvah d'oraita of dwelling in the land of Israel. Thus, if the thought occurs to them to go and conquer the land of Shinar or the land of Assyria or any other country and to settle therein, they are thereby transgressing the commandment of God. If they decide they're going to go dwell in some other land, nope. And that, which our rabbis have emphasized, the significance of the commandment of settling the land of Israel, and that it's forbidden to leave it except for certain specified reasons. What are the specific reasons why a person is allowed to leave Israel? What are the three reasons? Anybody know?
Parnasa, Isha,
Limud Torah, Nisuim.
That's right. Parnasa, Isha, and Limud Torah. If for whatever reason you can't find the wife in Israel, or you can't find the job, or for whatever reason you can't find the proper place to learn, or you think it's better to learn in Chutz La'aretz, those are legitimate reasons to permanently dwell in Chutz La'aretz. But other than that, there's no other reason. The Gemara Ketubot says, he quotes this, he's referencing it when he says a rebellious wife. He says, this is the Gemara Ketubot, if he wants to emigrate to the land of Israel, if the husband wants to go to Israel and the wife refuses, she may be forced to go there. He can force her because it's a mitzvah. And if she still refuses, that's grounds for divorce without her ketubah. She says, I'm not going to move to Israel with you. Then he can divorce her without a ketubah. And the same way the other way. If she wants to go to Israel and he refuses, we force him to go. And if he refuses, then he has to divorce her and he has to give her the ketubah and she can go. In other words, because it's such an important mitzvah, you're allowed to force it, even in the context of marriage. The source of all these statements is in this verse, where we have been given this commandment, for this verse constitutes a positive commandment. It's repeated in many places, such as going and possess the land in Devarim. And he points out that Rashi explained it a little bit differently, that it's supposed to mean to dispossess of its inhabitants. But he says our interpretation of the verse is the principal one, is the more correct one. So this is, according to Ramban, the pasuk in the Torah that tells you that there is a mitzvah d'oraita to dwell in the land of Israel. Okay? I quoted the Gemara Ketubot over here. Don't really need to quote it. We already saw it. We'll get back to it later. And just so you know, and this is the context for our discussion tonight, the Ramban has to rewrite this whole idea at the end of the book of the Sefer HaMitzvot of the Rambam. This is something that we've looked at many, many times already in this year and in other places as well, where the Ramban added glosses at the end of the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvot of all the mitzvot that he thinks the Rambam forgot, or the ones that have to be combined, et cetera, et cetera. So number four of those mitzvot is this one. This is easily the most famous one, where the Ramban says, we are commanded to take possession of the land that God gave our forefathers, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and not leave it in the hands of other nations or in desolation. So far, the Ramban over here is actually talking about taking possession, right? Kibush. This is conquering. And what did he say? You shall dispossess the inhabitants of the land and dwell in it, for I've given you the land to possess it, and you'll divide the land for an inheritance. This is what the sages call obligatory war. This is talking about going to war in order to conquer the land. And they said in the Gemara in Sota, Rav Yehuda said, Yehoshua's war of conquest, all agree, is obligatory. Yehoshua, as he goes into Eretz Israel, that is a milchemet mitzvah. But David's war, where they go and they conquer more and more land, that was mitzvah, milchemet reshut. Okay. But what does it mean that they say that Yehoshua's war was a milchemet mitzvah? It's a mitzvah of Yishuv Haaretz, which is fulfilled through conquest. How can we dwell in the land if we don't conquer it first? But Ramban says, don't think that it was a one-time mitzvah of simply conquering the land. I say that the mitzvah about which the stages expanded greatly, namely living in the land of Israel, to the point that they said that anyone who leaves it and lives outside should be regarded in your eyes as an idolater. Anybody who leaves the land of Israel and lives outside is an idolater. This is all part of the positive precept, the mitzvah, for we've been commanded to take possession of the land and dwell in it. If so, it is a positive precept for all generations, binding upon every individual, even during the period of exile. Meaning, even when we don't have a state, even when we don't have possession of the land, so to speak, in terms of a government, there is still a mitzvah to go and dwell in the land of Israel. And the part about milchemet mitzvah, about conquering, that's just a hichitimtza. That's just part of the mitzvah, ultimately, of dwelling in the land of Israel. Now, what do we glean from the fact that the Ramban has to write this at the end of the book of the Rambam? What does the Rambam think?
That he doesn't count it.
The simplest meaning is that, at least according to Ramban, the Rambam does not count it as a mitzvah. Which, it's true, you know, as you go through the Sefer Mitzvot, you don't see any mitzvah of dwelling in the land of Israel. The closest that we get is Mitzvot Asay Kuf, Kuf Pei Zayim, 187. And you'll forgive me, he begins a little harshly. He commanded us to kill the seven nations that dwelled in the land of Canaan and to destroy them. This is the Rambam, Maimonides. Says, we are given a command to uproot and destroy the seven nations of Canaan that live in Canaan, since they are the root of idolatry in its first base. But right there, you get a hint, right? What's the reason for getting rid of these nations?
Get rid of idolatry.
It's to get rid of idolatry, right? Saying you must surely annihilate them. And he explained to us in many verses the reason for this is so that we do not learn from their heresy, right? In other words, we're going to live in the land, so we need to dispossess them so that we don't learn from their heresy. And many verses come to hint about this. And then the Rambam goes on a long discussion. He says, and you might think that this command is not practiced for all generations. Right? We just talked about this, right? This concept of, about mitzvot that are ledorot. What was the last mitzvah that we, what was the last year that we gave? It was in, Moav. That's right. The fact that we're not allowed to attack Moav. Yeah? Not allowed to go to war against Moav. Can everybody still hear me?
There was a break.
I lost you for a couple of seconds, but now it's clear again.
Okay, good, good. My network is strong, but okay. So the Rambam writes in his Sharashim that he's not going to count any mitzvot that don't exist forever, that are not ledorot, right? We learned that Rambam. So here he mentions it again. He says, maybe you'll think that this commandment, i.e. the commandment to destroy these seven nations, maybe it's not a ledorot mitzvah, since the seven nations have already ceased to exist. So maybe I shouldn't count it. He says, yeah, you would only think that if you don't understand anything. It is only one who does not understand the topic of a practice that is practiced, et cetera, et cetera. If you don't understand anything. But this command, a command that is finished by the arrival of its purpose, in other words, a command that once you do it, it's done, without it being dependent upon a specific time, that it is not practiced generations, rather it is practiced in each and every generation that the thing is found to be possible. If it comes back again, and it can come back again, then you have another mitzvah to do it. He said, for example, are you going to say that the mitzvah of Mechiyat Amalek, if we, you know, get rid of all of Amalek in any single generation, so therefore in the subsequent generation it doesn't exist? He says, of course not. We would never say that. So he says, the same is true of this mitzvah of killing the seven nations. It exists forever. Now, is this synonymous with the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Israel? No, not at all. It's the closest we'll get, but it's not synonymous.
And also, who is this mitzvah on? Is it on Beit Din? Is it on every Jew?
That's a good question. You could ask the same thing about Amalek, though, which is a machlokes rishonim. Is it on an army? Is it on individuals? Is it on the melech? Whose responsibility is it? It's a great question, but yeah.
It sounds like the Rambam is agreeing with Rashi. Vivishtem means to get rid of the locals.
Yeah, excellent point. That could be the Rambam's read of this Vahorashtem. It could be. It could also be that the Rambam sees Vahorashtem not as a mitzvah, but as a promise of some kind.
What could the shoresh of Vahorashtem be, meaning?
Good. So that's a good question. So I'll show you. I'll show you exactly why Rashi says what he says. The reason why Rashi says what he says is because of the previous pasuk. Because in the previous pasuk, it says, here. It says, "V'harashtem et kol yoshvei haaretz mipneichem." So there, it's clear that the subject, or the object rather, here is yoshvei haaretz, is people. So you could be harashtem, people.
Okay.
And when it says v'harashtem et haaretz, it seems to mean to uproot of some kind, almost to liberate, maybe.
So in the first pasuk, it's you are liberating the people,
something sort of, like that.
And the second pasuk, you're liberating the land.
Something like that, yeah. Now, does the Rambam believe that there's no significance to Eretz Yisrael? Chas v'shalom. However, when we do get to Hilchot Melachim, we get a little bit of mixed messages. This is the fifth parak of Hilchot Melachim. He starts off, it is permissible to live anywhere in the world, except for Egypt. Now, this is kind of a ha-ha funny moment, because where did the Rambam live?
In Egypt.
In Egypt. Now, he was forced to live in Egypt, and it could be that he didn't live in the exact area that was not allowed to live in, I'm not sure. Or it could be that it's only usher to go to Egypt through a certain path. But one way or another, he says, you're allowed to live anywhere you want in the world. There's no specific mitzvah to live in any specific place. However, in the next halacha, he says, it is forbidden to leave Eretz Israel. Once you enter Israel, you're not allowed to leave. Except for the purposes that the Gemara delineates, which we mentioned before. This is supposedly the reason why the Lubavitcher Rebbe never traveled to Israel.
You're teaching this just 1 week before you go into the United States.
Exactly. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe supposedly never traveled to Israel for this reason, because he knew he wouldn't be able to leave. Great sages would kiss the borders of Eretz Israel, kiss its stones, roll in its dust. Even when he walks 4 cubits there, will merit the world to come. There's a lot of great things about Israel. There's no comparison between the merits of a person who lives in Israel and ultimately is buried there, and when his body is brought there after his death. Obviously, the Rambam is very pro-Israel. It just didn't make it into the Sefer HaMitzvot. That's not how we read the pasuk. Okay, now we have to understand why. Why did the Rambam not read this pasuk? Is it simply that he felt like Rashi, that that's not what the pasuk meant? Or is there some other explanation, perhaps? So throughout the generations, for the last 1,000 years, everybody's grandfather tried to figure out why the Rambam did not list the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Israel. And we get basically 3 classes of answers. The first class of answer is that he, in fact, did not list it. He didn't list it. And any mention of not being allowed to leave Israel, or how wonderful it is to live in Israel, or anything like that, according to the Peyat HaShulchan, which is Risal of Shklov, which is one of the Graz Talmidim, so this 18th century, one of the Vilnagon's Talmidim, the Peyat HaShulchan says, according to the Rambam, we must say that it is all by rabbinic decree, that the mitzvah, so to speak, of Yishuv Eretz Israel, if there is such a mitzvah, is only rabbinic. There's no biblical obligation. But he says the plain sense inclines toward the Ramban, that there is such a mitzvah. Because he says, even when you look at Chazal, they talk about how the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Israel is Shakul Keneged Kol HaTorah Kula. Those of us in the Smichas Chaver program will remember well that one of the things that you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do on Shabbos is what?
my property in Eretz Yisrael.
Is to sign the deed for a property in Israel for you. Even though that's ktiva, you're asking him to do it in Isser D'Oraita, which you're not supposed to do for any mitzvah, frankly. But for this mitzvah specifically, we're allowed to. So it seems like it has a lot of strength. So Rabbi Yisrael of Shklov says it seems strange that the Rambam shouldn't list it and doesn't consider it a mitzvah, but the Ramban does. So according to Rabbi Yisrael of Shklov, the Rambam in fact does not count it as a mitzvah. Malasot, he doesn't count it. The Megillat Esther on the Rambam, which is a sefer on the Sefer HaMitzvot, so a response to Ramban, to Nachmanides, was written in the 16th century. So he classically says that the Rambam didn't count it because it only applied during the days of Moshe, Yehoshua, and David. In other words, the Rambam considers this mitzvah to be not l'dorot. Can you still hear me?
The mitzvah is extinct.
Yes, he considers this mitzvah, unlike the mitzvah, let's say, of killing the seven nations, this mitzvah is no longer valid, no longer existent. It was only a mitzvah for those earlier generations. It was a mitzvah of kibush. And as long as Israel was not exiled from its land, but once we were, after they're exiled, this mitzvah does not apply until the time of Mashiach. As for the statement brought from the Sifrei that they wept and read this verse when they came back, he says, it seems that they wept because of their inability to fulfill this verse because the temple had been destroyed. So, in other words, according to the Megillat Esther, there is, in fact, no continuous biblical mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Israel. There was one given to Moshe, Yoshua, and David, but it no longer exists. One basis for this is Tosfot. This is a famous Tosfot, very much debated. Tosfot on that Gemara that we just read before about the man and the woman and moving to Israel and divorce and all of that. Tosfot says, he says, it doesn't apply anymore nowadays. Why? Because it's dangerous to move to Israel. This is in the 12th century. He says, it's dangerous. Sakanat drachim. You can't, the wife or the husband can't say, no, I want to go to Israel. And the other one, has to listen. It's pikuach nefesh. That's position number one. Position number two, Hayomer Rabbeinu Chaim, the mysterious Rabbeinu Chaim, Dachshav eino mitzvah ladur b'Eretz Yisrael. Now, we could pause there, stop right there, and say, Achshav eino mitzvah ladur b'Eretz Yisrael, and that would be, there you go. That's what the Megillat Esther was talking about. The thing is, we have a continuation. Ki yesh kama mitzvot atluyot b'Eretz, v'kama onshin, de'ein anu yuchalun nizaher b'hem v'lamor aleihem. Why? Because there are a lot of mitzvot atluyot b'Eretz, and they're dangerous, right? Truma, Meiser, Shemitah, all these other mitzvot that apply, and we don't know how to be careful about them. And therefore, basically, it's not a good idea to move to Eretz Israel, so there's no mitzvah. What does he mean? What does he mean by this?
By moving to Eretz Israel, you're going to be overrun other mitzvot.
So there's no mitzvah. There was a mitzvah, but there's no mitzvah now because you're in danger of doing other things. So it's almost like a gzeira. You shouldn't move to Israel because you might violate mitzvot atliyot b'aretz. Is that it?
Yeah, it's too dangerous. It's the mitzvah of moving to Israel doesn't supersede the problems of not fulfilling the other mitzvot that are connected with Israel.
Right.
In other words, you could be putting yourself in a position of breaking many mitzvot.
Right. Okay, that could be. Yeah, that's the idea. And there is another option. It doesn't fit perfectly with the words that we have, but it seems that some felt that this was a way to read the Rav Chaim, that perhaps he's saying, because the mitzvot tafluyot b'aretz don't apply anymore, that's why. See, the fact is that, know it or not, like it or not, most of the mitzvot tafluyot b'aretz nowadays are only midrabanan. Until you have the fachot, most of Klal Yisrael in Israel, and perhaps even until we resettle the land according to our Shvatim, which is going to take a while, and be a little bit of a logistical problem. It could be that they won't apply Midaraita. So maybe Rabbeinu Chaim is in some way saying that there's only a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael when you can do the mitzvah of Tatuah Ba'aretz. I know it doesn't fit into the words that he's saying here, but there is a position like that, and sometimes it's been attributed to him. Now, the Maharitatz really doesn't like this, really didn't like this. He quoted somebody, there's a tshuva that he wrote where a man took a neder that he wanted to move to Israel. And then it didn't work out. His business took off or whatever. And then he wanted to know, did he have to nullify the neder? So some said that, yeah, you have to nullify the neder because there's a mitzvah to move to Eretz Yisrael. So that combines with the neder and you can't even nullify it, maybe. Maybe you can't even nullify it because it's a mitzvah. And he says, maybe this, some have based this on Rabbeinu Chaim. Sorry. Let me backtrack for a second. The Rush said he didn't have to worry about it, that he's allowed to do Hatarat Nedarim because there's no mitzvah to move to Eretz Israel. And some said that that was because of Rabbeinu Chaim. In other words, the Rush used Rabbeinu Chaim to give this guy a way out of this neder. Now the Maritat says, no way. He says, nobody quotes this Rabbeinu Chaim. Nobody holds of it. The Rush doesn't mention it. The Maharam Rottenberg doesn't mention it. Nobody mentions it. He says, maybe if Rabbeinu Chaim said it, all he meant was that because the path is hard to get through, that's why you don't have to move to Eretz Yisrael, which is basically the first position of Tosfot. So he thinks that really Rabbeinu Chaim is identical with the first position of Tosfot. And then at the end he says, what does that mean, Hagat Talmidi?
Mistake in the way it was written down.
Yeah, he says the student wrote it down and he added a little bit. He made a mistake. He didn't understand Rabbeinu Chaim. So this position may not exist at all. But it would be consistent, at least with the Megillat Esther, who says that this might be the position of the Rambam, that the mitzvah at some point applied, but no longer applies, and therefore the Rambam is not going to count it, because it doesn't apply nowadays. The Avnei Nezer, the Sakat Rabbi, he just says, you know, the Megillat Esther must not have seen the Sifrei, because the Sifrei says that when they returned to their place and said, living land of Israel is equivalent to all the mitzvot, and it talks about all the sages that returned to Israel. So we see that the mitzvah is binding because it's used in conjunction with this pasuk. So now the Sagat Rav Rabbi gives us another possible answer. He says maybe the Rambam did count it. He counted it in the mitzvah of you shall surely smite them, the one that we read, number 187. In other words, he thinks that the Rambam combined the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael with this mitzvah of destroying the seven nations. That part of the mitzvah of destroying the seven nations is conquering the land of Israel, and that continues to apply. That's how the Sakat Rav Rebbe understands the Rambam. So he would say there is a mitzvah, but it's part of the other mitzvah. And now we get to the last position. This one is the one that's most often quoted, most often attributed to the Rambam, even though it's very, very tenuous. So one place that we see it, though, is in the Ema Banim Smicha. Who knows, who wrote the Ema Banim Smicha? You remember?
It's a modern book, right? Someone in the Holocaust?
Yeah. He was this Hasidish Rebbe who did tshuva and became a Zionist. Rav Yisachar Shlomo Tachtal. He was a virulent anti-Zionist, just like a good Hasid. And then he changed his mind before the Holocaust. He changed his mind and he wrote a whole book about the importance of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So he has to deal with this Rambam. So he thinks the Rambam, who did not count this, he says this is based on the rule established in the fourth principle of Sefer Mitzvot, which we also have talked about, not to count commandments that include the entire Torah. Since the mitzvah of settling the land of Israel is such a dear mitzvah that includes all the mitzvot and embraces the entire Torah, and the establishment of all the festivals and Rosh Chodesh and all its mitzvot depend on it, so too the entire life of the nation depends upon it. Hence, it is a general and not a specific mitzvah. In other words, the Rambam only counts specific mitzvot. Put on tefillin, sit in a sukkah, daven, specific actions that a person does.
Following this logic, I might even have said that all the mitzvot ha-tuliyot ba'aretz depend on Yishuv Eretz Yisrael.
Exactly.
So therefore, it's all included.
Yeah, that's exactly what he's saying. He's saying all the mitzvot ha-tuliyot ba'aretz, all of the regalim, all of the korbanot, and Rosh Chodesh. See, Rosh Chodesh, the Rambam, he points us to the Rambam Sefer Mitzvot number 133, where he's talking about Kiddush HaChodesh, the mitzvah of being Mekadesh Rosh Chodesh, which we're doing tonight. We're doing tomorrow, properly. He says, guess what? That which we count today outside of the land with the work of intercalation that is in our hands, that's the Kiddush HaChodesh Ayidei Aluach, the fact that we do it now according to the calendar and not according to the moon, and say that this day is Rosh Chodesh and that day is a holiday, it is not because we have determined the holiday from our own calculation. Rather, it's because the great court in the land of Israel had already determined that this day is Rosh Chodesh or a holiday. It's because the Beit Din of Israel determined that this was Rosh Chodesh. That's what gives people in Chutz La'aretz the right to celebrate Rosh Chodesh on that day. And he goes even further. We indeed consider the day determined by them, meaning the inhabitants of the land of Israel, to be Rosh Chodesh, as it is upon their work itself that we count and determine it, not upon sighting. It is upon their calculation that we rely. And look what he says. If we were to assume, by way of illustration, chas v'shalom, that the Jewish residents of the land of Israel disappeared from the land of Israel, God forbid that God would do this, since he promised that he would erase the traces of the nations there totally, and that there would not be a court there, nor a court outside the land of Israel that was ordained there, in such a case, this calculation of ours would surely not help us at all in any way. Meaning, if there was not a single Jew in Eretz Israel, there would be no Rosh Chodesh and no Pesach and no Sukkot and no Shavuot or anything like that in Chutz La'aretz. It would not exist. It wouldn't happen.
Is he saying that the calendar we have today was already determined by a Beit Din many years ago?
Yes.
The very calendar I'm looking at today,
yes,
was already determined.
Yeah. Hillel HaZaken. He was the one who did it. But what does that mean? It means that even Rosh Chodesh depends on Jews living in Israel. So Rabbi Sachar Teichtal says, based on that, the Rambam doesn't need to make a mitzvah of living in Israel. Israel doesn't have to be a mitzvah. It's the prerequisite for so many mitzvot. It's the root of all these mitzvot. There's no mitzvah to breathe. You need to breathe. There's no mitzvah to eat. You need to eat in order to do anything. Who else says? That's the Bnei Banim. That's Rav Henkin, Zichron Olivracha, who died about a year ago. He quotes the Tzitz Eliezer, who also quoted Rav Kook, who says that the Rambam does hold that there is a mitzvah, and he doesn't count it because it's a mitzvah haklali. It's a mitzvah that all other mitzvot depend on. As he writes in the fourth principle, it's not right to count general commands that embrace the entire Torah. The same applies to the settlement of the land of Israel, upon which many essential parts of the Torah depend. The Rambam similarly doesn't count Kedoshim Tiyu, the mitzvah of Kedoshim Tiyu, to be holy. He doesn't count that. One of the reasons given is because it's a klali mitzvah. It has all kinds of applications. Now, he adds on, according to what the Ramban writes, that all the mitzvot were essentially given to be fulfilled only in the land of Israel, that it might also be applied to this. This is what I have down here. The Ramban writes in a famously controversial statement. The truth is, it's not that controversial, because Rashi says the exact same thing. He quotes the exact same midrash in Sefer Dvarim. He quotes the Sifri. The Sifri says that even though I exile you from the land to the outside of the land, be outstanding with the mitzvot. Mitzuyanim b'mitzvot. So that when you return, they will not be new to you. What does that mean?
In Chutz La'aretz, you're only doing them so that you know how to do them when you come back to Israel.
That's right. There's an allegory of a master that became angry with his wife and sent her to her father's house. He said to her, wear your adornments, your jewelry, so that when you return, they won't be new to you. Keep them, make sure you keep in practice. So too, Yirmiyahu said, "Hatzivi lach tzionim, set up markers. These are the commandments that Israel will be outstanding with them. Set up markers, the tzionim. What are the tzionim? The mitzvot, so that you keep them." And he says, you shall place these words, only obligating personal obligations, like tefillin and mezuzahs, right? These are personal obligations. Ramban says, the reason you have to do them is to make sure to keep in practice, so that when you come back to Israel, you continue to do them. So apparently, you know, one could have made the argument that this is what the Rambam subscribes to as well. In other words, all of the mitzvot only apply in Eretz Israel. Now, that's not really what the Rambam meant. It's definitely not what the Rambam thinks. But it's thematically, homiletically connected.
According to that mashal we just learned about keep the mitzvot when you leave the land, so you'll know them when you come back, it sounds like a case for keeping Shemitah and Truma and Maaser and Bikurim and anything else.
No.
While you're in Chutz La'aretz.
No, that's the whole point. He says, he specifically says, only obligating personal obligations. Things that you do to yourself, your body. Not the things that are applied to the land, like Shemitah and Truma. That's the point.
Okay.
So he continues, the B'nai Banim does. So that's what he says here. He says, such a command should not be counted as a separate mitzvah, for it does not command a specific action. That's the Rambam. Shouldn't count general mitzvot. We see that he only excludes mitzvot that do not have a specific action, like the example cited there. This is not similar to the land of dwelling in Israel, to the mitzvah of dwelling in Israel, which involves a specific act of living in the land. And if a person is abroad crossing the border and entering the land. So in other words, he is not so sure. He doesn't think that this is correct in the Rambam. Rav Henkin himself thinks that the Rambam should have counted the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. He should have counted. He should have said, there is an act that you have to do. If you're living in Egypt, for example, you now have an obligation to travel to Israel and dwell there. That's what he should have said, according to Rav Henkin. This is an argument against the position that the Rambam really didn't count the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael because it was too general. You know, this is what the Ramban thinks. The Ramban thinks the Rambam didn't count it. So that's the Rav Henkin. And the last thing is the Pnini Halacha. Rav Melamed also just says, he thinks, like Rav Kook, unsurprisingly, that the Rambam left it out of the count simply because it is a general mitzvah. It's a mitzvah that encompasses the entire Torah. So at the end of the day, what you have here is a machlokas between Rambam and Ramban. At least according to Ramban, it's a machlokas, where the Rambam doesn't think there's a mitzvah of living in Eretz Israel. Thinks there's a mitzvah to kick the inhabitants of Canaan, at least at that point in time, out of Israel, and as well as chasing around the seven nations. But no specific mitzvah of living in Eretz Israel. And the Ramban definitely does. The Ramban adds this to the mitzvot that the Rambam left out. And we saw a bunch of different approaches to understand why the Rambam might have left it out. One is that he simply left it out. It's not a mitzvah. Another is that it was a temporary mitzvah, but not l'dorot. And another is that it's a general mitzvah that applies, but the Rambam is not going to count it because it breaks the rules of how he counts mitzvot. He doesn't count general mitzvot. Even if it's really a mitzvah, even if it's a command, he won't count it if it's a general one. And that is that's the sugya. Shakar.
Can we say with certainty that the Rambam is consistent in not counting general mitzvot? If we look through his whole list of mitzvot, as I'm sure many people have studied, can we say that the Rambam is very consistent about this?
I can't say with any expertise, but the Rambam mentions it in his rules, and he gives examples of what he's not going to count as general mitzvot. This is not one of them, by the way. That would have made this conversation a lot shorter, which I guess is another strike against the general mitzvah approach. But yeah, of course, the Rambam is consistent. He's nothing if not consistent, generally.
Okay. So do we have a position which says that the Rambam says that Horashtem et Haaretz means to kick out the seven nations?
I think it's plausible that the Rambam agrees.
And that's not followed or attached to a mitzvah of Yishuv Haaretz specifically.
No.
Did somebody say that? Do we have that as one of the opinions?
Well, the Rambam definitely. The Rambam doesn't list any mitzvah, and I don't remember if he quotes the Vaharashtam anywhere. But if he does, I would assume that he either says like Rashi that it simply means to kick out the other nations, although that's not the point that he uses for that. Or alternatively, and this is what I suspect, that the Rambam thinks that this pasuk is not a mitzvah, but a promise, which the Rambam does elsewhere. The Rambam famously doesn't, there's one other big machlokas, which I assume we're going to do when we get to Parshat Nitzavim between Rambam and Ramban about a mitzvah, and that is the mitzvah of tshuva. The Rambam, there's a battle of debate whether the Rambam counts the mitzvah of tshuva, but what we can say confidently is that the Ramban definitely does. And the pasuk that the Ramban uses to show that there is a mitzvah of tshuva, which is in Parshat Nitzavim, which is, what pasuk is it? Meshuvu or something. What is it? Which pasuk in
Nitzavim? Meshavtem ad Hashem Elokechem.
Probably. Meshavtem ad Hashem Elokechem. Probably. So the Ramban uses that pasuk. The Rambam writes explicitly in his Hilchot Tshuva that that pasuk is simply a promise. It's a promise. You will return to God. Here, let's see. It should be right here. V'shavta ad Hashem Elokecha. This pasuk, V'shavta ad Hashem Elokecha, which according to Ramban is the mitzvah of doing tshuva. The Rambam quotes this pasuk as just a promise to do tshuva, that we will do tshuva right here. Here we go. Kol nevim, kol nativu ala tshuva, kvar hivticha Torah, shesof Yisrael lasot tshuva. Shneemar vayaki avo alecha, v'shavta ad Hashem Elokecha. So my suspicion is that the Rambam understands this pasuk similarly. V'horashtem et ha'aretz. Since it's not said Belashon Tzivoy. That's my suspicion.
Nice, nice. Okay. Very nice.
Yay, Shabbat Shalom, everybody. Have a good night. Shabbat Shalom.
Shkoyach to you. Shabbat Shalom, everybody.
All right.
Shkoyach. That's good.